AAC meeting, Monday, May 8, 2017.
I will do so. I'll watch. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Dr. B.
I just have two items. One of them is already taken care of. Mr. Flake has taken care of the fact that I had asked that the elevator default could be moved to the street rather than the mezzanine. And he's talking to the elevator people who have done that. And the rationale, since you are in the AC meeting, is having to wait for it to come up from the mezzanine on cold, wet, windy, rainy days, it might be nicer if the default to have it up on the street, whereas waiting on the mezzanine isn't that painful. The other thing I complained about for the last 5 years is the signage on the intercom. And they're halfway to fixing it. They've changed the signs, the emergency signs, now read, push the button once, the only to talk. The only problem is the intercom itself says push the button to talk. So they need to put the word once on the actual intercom so that what the sign says matches what the intercom says, and then everybody will know you push the button once, and then you can talk back and forth with the train people. So I want to get that on the record here that we're halfway there, and maybe make a motion that we pass that on to the full AAC so we can go into the board report next month.
And that's why we miss you so much, Bill, because without you, we don't get any motions. One motion. So that is a motion you're making now?
Yes, the motion is to have the word once added to the instructions for use of the intercom at the intercom so that the instructions at the intercom match the instructions on the sign for emergencies.
Yes. Can I get a second?
Yeah.
Discussion?
Yeah.
Charlie?
What if you press it twice?
If you press it twice, you just confuse the conductor.
Well,
as long as you don't hold it down, if you hold it down, then they can't talk to you back and forth.
What does the actual visual sign say?
The actual visual sign, which is the one that's at the center doors, which is what to do in emergencies, it says to use the intercom, press the button once on the intercom. Which they used to say that. They used to say, do not hold it down. And they changed it to press it once, which is good. And on the intercom itself, it just says, press the button. And so people are used to CDs and TV and whatever, press the button. What does that mean? Press the button once, press the button twice, as Charlie will do, or press the button and hold it down. So if they just simply say, press the button once, that's pretty intuitive.
CB, wow, okay, it's taking us back.
You're still using them. Breaker.
That's do Papa Bear or Baby Bear have anything to say about that? IED. Couldn't resist. There are a lot of staff that have anything they want to say about that before we take a vote of the motion. No? Okay.
Yeah, before we talk about the gentleman's talk, because it's a little bit triggered again.
Okay. Do we have...
No, that's okay.
Yes, we have second public comment.
Eric Peterson, local residence, 612 Jefferson Street, Northeast D.C. Actually, also a resident of Idaho. First compliment, I travel quite a bit and use... since I've been disabled 4 years, I have to use transit systems. I can't drive. D.C. is an exemplar. You folks, the whole metro system and the population are so well educated in comparison to places like Boston, where it's very smooth, very appropriate, and you may get spoiled with the quality of care here and may think you have some issues, but literally two-thirds of our cities and counties in Idaho still don't have transition plans. So I just want to give that compliment. The reason I'm here is the Rhode Island Metro Station. The platform, and I realize it's one of your first stations. Interestingly enough, this is a threshold issue. We all, if you're in a power chair or walker, you know coming to a threshold on a door, it's like if it's above a half inch, it's like a wheel chock. It stops you dead in the water. All right? And if you hit it too fast, if you got a wheel like mine, you just spent $70 blowing out a bearing. The metro station, the entire length except near the very, very ends, is inaccessible due to the height, particularly on non-visiting times, because the height is above a half inch. It's almost 3/4 of an inch. I have taken down 2 red lines because you get developed the technique of getting back 5-6 feet, hitting full power and leaning back and hope you got enough speed to get over. But if your platform on your wheelchair hits the door frame, suddenly that door doesn't close anymore. And if a door doesn't close on a red line train or any train, it stops. So they offload whatever else. I'm up to 2 trains now. I always report myself when it happens so they know and I've learned to identify the car. But you just did save tracks. I was expecting some response to that because I know it's a known issue. This is not new. It's been reported many, many times. I'm also quite familiar with the process. You folks are in a subcommittee. When you're doing an ADA complaint, you need to comply with the system. This is my first step. Get into the system, follow it, then do your online DOJ complaint. Now, granted, I'm not sure if there actually is going to be a civil rights department in the Department of Justice, but my intent is to actually give you some ammunition. If you have not gotten a department, if you have not gotten an ADA complaint, you'll bloody well get one now, so you've got something to talk to the higher on and the big point, the money people who are got all these different issues. So is there any reason I should not file an ADA complaint on the threshold systems at Rhode Island? And I'm asking this as a question. Personally, this is weird. Threshold for a train. Threshold for a door, yes, but threshold for a train, don't know.
Okay. Can I come on to it?
Yeah.
Yes. So, is it
Mr. Peterson.
He's Peterson.
Actually, Dr. Peterson, but helps.
No. So, let's begin with where we are and how we got here. So, yes, the platform, like when you're dealing with the gaps, that's what we call it. Gaps.
I think threshold, not gaps. Threshold. Gaps are fine.
Well, no.
Is a gap?
Vertical gaps.
Vertical gaps, okay.
That's what we're dealing with. So, you're right. At that station, I've been advising because there has been no substantial construction at that station.
Other than the walkway and other things, and when they're putting in the ADA bubbles and all that things, and when they did SafeTrak, those aren't substantial?
SafeTrak is not considered. SafeTrak is maintenance and the...
SafeTrak is capital improvement?
Right, but it's not substantial. It's not.
Couldn't raise it an inch there to get it up to the platform?
Not necessarily.
Hell, a lot easier than replacing the platform.
So here's what we're doing. Let me finish this. Dr. Peterson. Okay, so there are challenges with that platform. But the way we've been addressing them, and when we have complaints, and it has really addressed a lot of complaints related to that particular station and any others, frankly, with the vertical gaps that we find. And it's only one other station where
Silver Lake or whatever that is. I can't remember. I've heard about the other one.
Well, Rat Roads is the other challenge. What we ask our customers to do, and what we're working with internally, you can either change the height of the tracks, and you haven't done the track work, so that hasn't changed. You can conduct substantial construction at the platform, and that hasn't occurred. Or we can calibrate the cars to still be compliant at all of the stations, but to help address the issue at these stations. So instead of you or other customers having to bang the speed onto the tracks, what we're asking customers to do is to inform us of a car that they encounter and which the vertical gap.
Just wrong. All the cars. I'm not going to take that one. All the cars, the newer ones are a little bit better, but the car itself is not the problem. It's the platform.
Well, we understand whether the problem originates, but I'm telling you the solution we address with this body as well as the public in general has been working. Now, again,
I'm not going to sit there and say you shouldn't do what you believe you should do, but I know for a practical matter, one way that we've done is going out with customers, identify the cars, because generally speaking, our colleagues have been calibrating the cars to meet those vertical gaps at that station and still keep it in compliance at other stations. And generally speaking, if you look at our history of complaints of these, they have come down. Again, is it perfect? Is it the immediate solution? Is it the long-term solution? It's not. But it has worked in the immediate short term. Now again.
That's what, 30 years is the short term?
No, I've only been here at Metro 5 years, and I've been addressing this particular issue for 30 years.
And your predecessor was before that doing that?
I can't speak for people before. I'm coming from a system where we had some challenges, and I found ways until I can bring the substantial completion project to bear. I've tried to find ways to make accessibility work. And when it comes to the vertical gaps at that particular station and one other, the calibration of the cars have seemed to work for our customers. So, again, as the customers informed me that they had a challenge getting on a car, and they let me know what that car number is, I can get that working as we're fixing all the cars in terms of calibrating. They're not broken, but in terms of calibrating and adjusting the calibration for large numbers of people being on the vehicles, that's the way we can get the cars to meet up to the Rhode Island platform and not cause you or others to have to try to ramp your way onto the vehicles. That's what we've been doing.
Okay. What I'll just summarize is there has been no substantial construction there. Therefore, the ADA has not come into play because this is such a 76 station. The safe track, even though they replaced rails and things, I'm assuming, wouldn't be considered. Somehow that just doesn't fit in that ADA.
No, I know. That's the rail part.
So what I'm hearing right now is you're doing wonderful things. People at your level are doing great things. This is not elevated up to a higher level because there's been nothing to trigger it. I doubt that an ADA complaint.
I think most people in this agency are aware of what we're trying to do and understand.
Have there been dollars allocated to this in any event? Has there been any dollars allocated to resolve this problem?
Has there been any dollars
in the budget
allocated to?
I would ask that
we're good enough.
We have public comment that people be respectful and allow for an opportunity for people to answer.
This would drag out a long time.
This is a topic that this committee has been concerned about for some time. We have a number of individuals on the committee.
Okay, I'll let you go ahead. I'll file a complaint. Thanks.
No, but my only is that no one here would ever discourage anybody from pursuing all mechanisms available to them to address these issues. In fact, we would encourage it because I think that many of us here are from the advocacy community and agree and observe that it often takes addressing these issues from multiple levels and in multiple ways. Because Mr. Blake has indicated, there are short-term efforts, but we do need a long-term effort and a long-term solution. And I think it's probably about time the committee hear back from Metro engineers to whether at this subcommittee level or at the full committee level to discuss some long-range solutions. Because it is important that these things need to happen. Mr. Blake indicated nobody should have to be Evel Knievel to get onto a train. Nobody wants that.
No,
we don't.
Yeah. So I do appreciate the customer's comments, and I certainly would not discourage anybody from utilizing any means they wish. I mean, I should also add there are board meetings in which these type of public comments can be made as well. I would not discourage that as well. But again, as I'll just close and say, on the short term, I came in, this is a great system. Is it a perfect system? No. In this regard, we try to find a feasible, meaningful solution, and it seems to have worked in most cases. Again, is it the perfect solution? I would never say it has been the perfect solution. But the advocacy of this committee, the advocacy of the good doctor, if there's a way to engage in something else and move it beyond more creative and immediate pragmatic solutions, you're not going to get an argument from me.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Lake. Michelle.
Dr. Peterson, I'd like to echo that and suggest that in the last 2 years we have had platform work done, and that's done in the capital improvement budget, which is a slow-moving budget. But the way we have typically gotten capital improvements done is to put it on a wish list that then gets into the line and then gets moved up the chain. And one of the easiest ways of getting some impact is to have a person show up at a board meeting and tell them exactly what you told us, because we tell them that every month. But having a real person who's been Evel Knievel come in and tell them is a very positive thing to do, and point out that they are currently doing platform work. It's just this one hasn't been put on the register yet, and it would be really useful to save them money on damage to the cars from people coming in, and I think that would be a very powerful thing for you to do at one of the board meetings.
Is there a way to find out which platform can be done and how that's in the budget?
I'll share it with the committee and share it with you as a person asking on the, you know, at the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Blake. Yeah, no, absolutely. And, as I noted, it takes efforts at all levels from here on up and at the board and the SRAC and all those levels. Thank you, Dr. Peterson, for your public comment. Really do appreciate that. And somebody who just came back from Paris and rode the metro there, even Evel Knievel can't get onto those trains, let alone get down to the platforms. The whole system is inaccessible, which is frankly an embarrassment to an otherwise very beautiful and lovely city. Dr. B, do we have other public comment?
No, sir. There's no more public comment.
Okay, terrific. Thank you very much. Are we ready for our ombudsman report?
Yeah.
David Schaefer, are you here with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Awesome. Okay. Have at it.
The only thing I've left over, I think, from last month is the fact that we've now completely fixed the online complaint comment system, so that it's now fully accessible, and some customers already noted that. It was also pointed out to me in the last week or two that some of the links on the Metro Access web booking site were broken, and those are fixed as of today, too. So I think those are the only things I have left over from last month. Are there any questions at all? Brian, you said something about the construction on 8th Street, and I just encountered that myself recently, so I can tell you a little bit about that.
David, I have a question for you. The new web page, every time I go to it, it's different.
Yeah, I know.
And you have to keep jumping around to find what you want to find. And sometimes it's the top of the page, sometimes the bottom of the page, sometimes it's under a different column. And I wondered about accessibility for people with vision problems. I mean, I've got a cognitive problem, I can find something. But I can assume the readers may have a problem. You'll find where everything is gone. They keep shuffling it every time I sign on.
So let me say in that regard, you're right. And it's a challenge for staff as well. I had things bookmarked. I know, for example, the senior smart trip card. I had a bookmark of all the locations in Virginia so I could just tell people where to go. I'm still not able to find it now. I mean, it's been a challenge. Now, in terms of the changes, this is a work in progress. And obviously, it can't be an indefinite work in progress. At some point, we're going to have to land, for the lack of a better word, on our design. But as, and you could only imagine how many recommendations David's been sending. Mm-hmm. We just completed an FTA triennial review where ironically one issue was our platform issues, and we discussed those issues with the FTA. But they gave us some recommendations, not related to the GAP, I'm just saying, they gave us some recommendations for the website, so we made some changes there. You'll see new text related to filing customer complaints, new links directly to the complaint form. So as these changes are occurring, things are moving around a bit in that website. But at some point in the very near future, we're going to have to land. I know I just sent our IT team information that I'm going to want for the ability drive. I'm interested in that right now. But I just asked, accessibility is always going to be the case. If we find something that's not accessible, David's doing a great job with that, and we are trying to procure some software that will do a lot of the work for us. But in terms of the design, I can just tell you it's not final yet.
One of the things that I pointed out early on is the trip planner is something that's really important to use. And what they've done is, it used to be you could pick time to depart, time to arrive. Now it's only time to depart, unless you accidentally happen to hit some little arrow on the side and you get the choice of one or the other. The other thing that's very annoying is finding out what construction and what elevators and safe track are going on. It used to be right up here. You came on, it was there, and now they've hidden it. It took me about 10 minutes to find it last week because I had to plan when I was coming home from Boston whether I was going to have a train or get trapped. And some of the more important things they shouldn't be playing with, such as elevators, escalators, faster, safe track. And the trip planner isn't that important, but I think it gets used a lot.
Yeah, well, I know that we're working a lot on the trip planner. There's a problem with the interface between Google and us that is what I've been, that they've explained to me. Actually, now the trip planner works better with the screen reader than it does with a mouse, oddly enough.
David,
yeah.
This is Brian. Just to circle back to what Dr. Poser said, I think it's we're often maybe more cognizant of concerns about non-visual access, but Dr. Poser brings up a good point, which is that it's something maybe we don't discuss very often here, but individuals with intellectual disabilities are going to benefit from a website that has some stability, has some ease of access, has language that is clear and simple, and patterns that are consistent. So I think it's there are benefits to a broad community, even just to those of us who are a bit technophobic. So just something to think about.
Yeah, I am aware of that, and the one the software I'm testing and recommending we purchase does have some ability to test that sort of thing. An initial demo found that it was reading at about the college level, but it's supposed to be reading at about the sixth grade level, which is how we target most of our work. So that's a gap that we could work on. But yeah, I'm aware of that, Brian, and that's part of the testing that I will do when I'm able to get the software to do it.
Since the trip planner is directly related to Metro Access fare calculation, and you're having trouble with the trip planner, is there trouble with Metro Access fare calculation? I know it's a different committee. I can bring it up next Monday, but...
I think you can bring it up now. Let me just state this in a different way. Their design, I'm talking about the design, where it should be finding it now with the trip plan. You know, there's the floating window that's actually a problem for people with visual disabilities because it interferes with everything that's behind it. So we're now trying to mark that in one spot. So we're working on that. In terms of the design of the trip planner, that's one thing. And so when David's talking about issues between Google, I don't think that the trip planner is having a problem in terms of creating an itinerary in an accurate fare.
Sure.
That's not really the issue. The issue is the design and where it's located and how easy or how, in this case, how much more difficult we've made it for customers to use. So I think that's a different.
The reason I ask is the old trip planner used to tell you the fastest trip and then one earlier and one second one earlier. It doesn't do that anymore.
Yes.
It just gives you one trip.
No, it does. that there is an option, or you can say the triplet gets in there first, the triplet with the fewest transfers, the triplet with the lowest walking distance. So the one that says get me there first is the fastest trip.
But they only give you one trip at a time.
No, not always. They give you more depending on the options, but it does search for many fewer options than it used to. The way around that is to go down to the bottom of that area where you see these little links that say 5, 10, 15, 20, and so forth. Those will show you options within 5, 10, 15 minutes of the trip that you were trying to plan.
Well, they used to have that, but I can tell you this weekend they didn't have that. I looked for it. And the reason
it's there somewhere.
Yeah, that's the reason I brought that up for the trip planner is, not the trip planner, for the fare calculator, is they're calculating the least expensive fare during that 30-minute window. And if the trip planner is only giving you one number, I want to make sure that the trip planner still is calculating the cheapest fare during the 30-minute window.
Now, for that, I think that is a question for next week when folks will be here, and what we probably can do is have B contact the Metro Access staff to ensure all of the right people are here to answer that specific question and not just have to say, we'll come back and check. Since you're giving it to us today, we should be able to have the right person or persons here to answer that.
That's great. Denise will make sure that happens.
Sure. Chairman Doris has her hand up.
Sure, George Gordon.
Does it sound like to you like it sounds to me?
George, I can't hear you very well.
There's an echo, and so it's causing me to speak lower. So I'm not sure what that's about. Maybe I have a change. What I wanted to ask is, since you're on this topic, and I'm sorry that I wasn't here at the beginning, trip planning. I want to, we had asked, or we had brought up bringing the topic of the telephone automated telephone system that fixture users use, and frequently you're using it while you're in transit. And I'm not, you know, that's one of the ways I use it. I use it all the time. But I've seen other people use it in transit as well. So the one thing that it doesn't allow me to do that I'm aware of, you know, over the telephone, is particularly on the scheduled arrival time, is it will give me the next scheduled arrival time, but it won't allow me to go next, so I can plan, or previous. You know, so.
Doris, this is Brian. Are you talking about the phone one where you call the phone? We talked about that last month, and it's in the notes. And I'm glad you brought it up again because it's I find it annoying as heck. So
unfortunately wasn't here last month, and I didn't read that before I came here. So.
No, that's okay.
But I'm wondering, you know, is that something? To my knowledge, it's something that's unable to do now, and is it going to be some looking into doing it in the future, giving that functionality?
I did make a call about that, Doris. They told me they were looking into it, but I haven't heard back from them. So I will follow up on that again for next month and put that on my list.
I mean, there is a way to do it. It's just that it's a pain in the neck. You can't do it. You're locked out of doing it. I was going to say you can go start over. That's a whole different routine. But there's several functionalities I'd like to see on the phone system.
Doris, this is Brian. I agree. I think it might be of some value to address that topic specifically in a future meeting. And maybe to that point, if those of us on the committee who do use it occasionally, and sometimes you got to go analog and not always do the digital thing, that if we put together maybe a list of some of those functionalities that we would like to see added to that system to give more flexibility and more usability, because it's pretty archaic and not very flexible at all. I find it so much less transparent.
So that was my 23, and I hope Mr. Chair is exactly what you're suggesting.
Thank you. So I think that'd be something that we ought to consider as a committee. David, do you have other items for your office?
I would say that if you did such a list and send it to me, then I could send that to them before a meeting and they'd be able to cost it out and everything. And that'd be useful. You were asking about the 8th Street thing. I walked over there. I was going to Walgreens last week and walked into that barrier. The construction guy told me that the sidewalk was going to be closed for a few months.
Wow.
It was a DC thing. It wasn't one of ours.
Okay, so I can't blame you guys.
No, you can't blame us. You're talking about the one that's on the side of the street opposite Walgreens, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
On the metro side.
It made you think they created a temporary sidewalk, but they actually put you right in the street.
They put you right in the street.
That is a problem. But that is, I can't say it's a district. It might be a private company going beyond their district approved permit. I'm not sure about that. Well, it's not us, we certainly can follow up with them to try to find out from the permit office what rights or what grounds did they give the permit and what outlines did they provide them, because, it shocked me when they put me in the middle of the street and almost got hit by a bus.
Yeah, that makes two of us, Chris. It's a full closure. It's not very nice. Phil, I know you wouldn't want to say something.
Yeah, I just have one more question for
please.
Chris and the Ombudsman. I don't know whether it's Dunlop or Metro is doing something really good, but the last three weekends, the transfer at Metro Center from the orange silver line to the red line, the red line train has been sitting in the station when we got off with the orange or the silver, so you could get up and catch it and not wait 20 minutes for the next one. And the same thing has happened the other way when we come back on the red line. The orange or the silver or the blue down below is either waiting or coming in. I don't know if the central control center is actually paying attention to the transfer stations, since there are such long gaps. You know, so long rush hour scheduling, there are long gaps between trains, whether they're actually keeping them there so people can transfer, or whether it's just done one for the last single week.
We could check on that and see, but perhaps this year we could play the lottery or something. I don't know. Because that didn't have to be there, but we'll see. Let's see if the planning has anything to do with
it. My question might trigger that as something we might do, because during Safe Track on the weekends, there's long gaps between the trains and having them wait an extra 20 seconds or a minute for people to transfer at the major transfer sections. God, that would make passengers happy.
It sure would. I know, like, this is Brian, though, in the BART system in San Francisco Bay Area, they will extend the dwell time, the wait time, to make sure that those connections happen, in part because their schedules are a lot longer between trains, so they make sure that they do that. So if we are going to have continued schedule impact like we see with Safe Track, it would be good to have that happen. And Phil, I got to circle back to your motion. We never took a vote.
Yes, I called the motion.
You came all this way to reintroduce motions to our meeting. So here we are, I just blithely ignored it. So do you want to restate your motion just for folks to remember?
Was it the elevator motion?
It was. The ones pushes button once.
Yes. The question was, currently the signage at the emergency center door says to push the button once to use the intercom. The signage on the intercom itself just says push the button. And I am making a motion requesting that they add the word once to the signage on the intercom itself, so that they will be consistent between the emergency sign at the center doors and the intercom itself, no matter where it's located. Because some of the intercoms are actually located next to the emergency sign, and the intercom says push the button once. excuse me, emergency side says push the button once, and the intercom says push the button, and they're right next to each other. Mm-hmm.
And we did have that motion, and it was seconded earlier, if I remember, that came up with by Charlie. Any discussion about the motion?
George.
George.
So, I'm sorry that I wasn't here, but this is on the train?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Yes, okay.
And the elevators.
And the elevators.
Right, okay. It's the same problem in the elevators, I think. Is that right, Bill?
Okay, so this is I would like to friendly amend it and ask that, you know, if changes are going to be made, there needs to be a way to provide for those buttons being both visible and tactile for people with vision impairments right now, for example, on the elevator, on most elevators. There is no way that looking as a low vision person, you could discern which one is which. And certainly in the trains, I have no idea on God's little green earth where the emergency intercom is. So, and don't see it when I'm on the train. And since there are many of us who do have a residual vision, that should be taken into account. And secondly, certainly tactile signage as well. I mean, without that, we are at distinct disadvantage and also, you know, if you're on the train, like I often do, from Vienna or someplace out there, or from King Street back to Arlington in the evening after a community meeting, I'm often alone on a car, or there aren't very many people sitting near me. So if something happens, you know, I need to know where that is too. And my memory of this whole situation is that although this committee, I was at E&D, I'm finishing now, I was at E&D, recommended signage that would provide contrast so that persons with vision impairment could see the signs like that. Sorry, I'm getting static. That nothing was ever done about it. So I think now this is a new day and we need to do something about it.
Thank you, Doris. And you sound fine, by the way. That makes you feel any better about the static. So we hear you just fine. Thank you. Thank you. Bill, do you want to address the potential amendment to that motion?
I would be delighted, because one of the earlier things we said was nobody knows where the intercoms are. And the emergency signage at the center doors does not address that, because it's a single sign used in all of the trains, and some of the trains have the intercom at the end of the trains, some of them have it right next to that sign. And so I'd be delighted to add to the amendment, add to the motion, that the signage per se be adequate for full accessibility for the entire community as to where the intercom is located and where the button on the intercom is located. And I think that cover everything.
And it's funding now, which is what you're talking about. Yes. Present funds.
Right. Further discussion? Anyone else? Okay, so I'm going to summarize the motion. The motion is to recommend that WMATA update the signage for the emergency call buttons so that it reflects the visual sign and the functionality of the communication system and be accessible to individuals with visual disabilities.
And making sure it's an accessible height.
Sure, it's fully accessible.
Yeah, fully accessible.
And what tells you the location of the communication device.
Yes. Right, in cases where the sign is not proximate to the button. Okay. So full accessibility, including location, and reflecting of the actual printed material. All those in favor of the revised and hopefully not convoluted motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
Be a rolling cross.
Motion carried. Me, you'll figure it out. I do appreciate that there's a lot packed into that motion, but I think it's important for a lot of reasons, not least of which reasons for the safety issues that Doris mentioned in her comments. So, thank you, Doris. I appreciate that. So, and thank you, Dr. B, for your patience for making sure we get that motion clarified if necessary. David and Chris, are you guys ready to talk about Gallery Place? Is that next, or are we talking about?
Yes,
let's go to Gallery Place, right? Because depending on city's next, but since you said David was.
Well, before we leave public comment, just before we leave public comment.
Yes, sir.
So I know this is not your access, not BRS, but Ms. Rush, we did hear word back from my colleagues that they're correct, that you were correct. And I've told you, a lot of Metro Access customers have not been receiving the reminder calls, and there's a technical issue that's going on, so others in the room may have experienced some of that as well. But yeah, your calls have not been coming for a good 2 weeks now. So we're, you know, I know, yeah, but we're following up on it with a lot of customers.
Was there any consolation, might not either?
Ms. Rush is totally correct about such matters.
Well, I don't understand why.
On the microphone, please. Sorry.
I don't understand why you just don't announce, but send out an alert or announcement that you're having difficulties, and until further notice, or we're having a problem, and you won't be receiving a call. Or you go 2 weeks, and I'm like, what is a call? I'm sitting there waiting, I'm looking, I'm waiting to call. And, you know, just notifies, just like the same way if there's a snowstorm, we've got to cut the system. We're closing at 4 o'clock.
Yeah. Well, as you know, we have a Metro Access staff member here in the room, so they're taking notes. I will share this officially with Metro Access, but I think it's also fair that this committee brings up your suggestion. For all cases, like you said, snow, phones out of line.
Yeah.
You know, so let's just bring that up next.
Yeah, because really, because y'all always use my name, a lot of times it's not working. I don't say nothing. I just say she called. But if it's down, it's down.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Denise. I appreciate that. I agree that it's a systemic issue. Notice it should go out so that people are aware and are waiting for those phone calls and potentially missing rides. Ready for Gallery Place?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I
like that enthusiasm.
The background is that we've had safety and crowding issues at Gallery Place. On the Red Light platform, as you probably know, it's been in the post and reported. And, a lot of this also is traffic flow problem. People just, the way it's designed with the red line on top of the yellow green, and Gallery Place is a T, it's not an X, like Metro Center in LaFont or Mortimer, where the red line's more in the middle of the cross between the lower levels and instead of being at the top of the T. So there's two compounded problems. The traffic flow coming around from the mezzanine and from yellow and green create people walking into each other because everybody's trying to go in the different directions as they're coming out of the escalators and trying to go around the corner of the fourth. Plus, because of the roadside, you've got the problem of the 6 versus 8 car trains. And when people get off the escalators, they're actually standing for the most part down where the 7th and 8th cars are on the train. And you've got to go down approximately 90 feet before you get to the place where there's now a decal on the floor that shows you where the 6th car is. So what we're trying to do is address both of those problems at the same time through two different ways. One is as to the traffic flow. We're reversing the escalators from into the red line platform from above and below. And we're putting in a guardrail between the escalators and that elevator that sits across from the escalators on the platform in the direction of the Chinatown exit, if you can picture that. So it will prevent people coming up and down the escalators from crossing over each other. They'll be forced to go around the escalator bank and in separate ways to the gallery place, to the Shady Grove side of the Red Line platform. That solves some of that traffic flow problem. Then what we're trying to do is get them further down the platform when a six-car train arrives. So we're looking at a couple things here, improving the signage that shows where the sixth car is going to arrive. Right now there's something painted on the floor, but when it's crowded, people are standing on that, and that doesn't help a lot. So there's we have this Amplify customer test survey site that about, I think, 5,000 customers are in. So we're setting out a survey with different types of decals to find out which one they think is going to be the most effective that we'll put on the wall to show where that place is. The other thing we're trying to get to figure out technologically is to put some sort of audio beacon at that place that will be tied into the API. The API is the data flow that runs the PIDs, the passenger information displays, that tell you when a train's arriving. Those also show how many cars are in the train. The same data flow that these app developers tap into when you use your smartphone to find out, you know, when your train's arriving on various apps and what many cars it has and so forth. So there, the audio beacon, unlike the kind of beacons we've been talking about previously with our Click and Go project, these beacons are there for everybody, and they will be out loud and announce whether the coming car is a six car or an eight car. They then tell people the six car to move down the platform. The API should be able to be tied into that. We're going to be doing different sort of testing to see if we can get them to have variable audio like we do on the bus enunciators. We're also going to put audio beacons on the escalators to tell people which escalators to take and to where to stand and when to turn, which direction to turn so people aren't coming down the escalators and walking into the guardrail. That's going to be a particular problem for our visually impaired customers if we don't get good communication out, because it's going to be quite surprising after you've had travel planning, O&M training in that station, to suddenly turn the direction you've been trained to go in and walk smack into a guardrail and not understand what's going on. So I'm going to be working with Chris on that and also with NFB and ECB to make sure we get the word out to the entire visually impaired community on that. So those are the two aspects of it that we're trying to fix, to improve the traffic flow and where people are standing. We'd also be putting signs up at this where the 7 to 8 cars come off, so that when people come off the train, they know which direction to turn with the new escalator traffic flow. I'm trying to figure out some way to make those signs. They're at least going to make sure they're very visible for people with low vision, contrast problems, and so forth. I'm not sure how practical it's going to be to make them tactile. Or I'm trying to get them to look at whether we could use some sort of audio beacon there too, but then we've got to worry about it conflicting with the one that's telling people it's a 6 or 8 car train and the one that's going to be on the escalators above too. So there's some complications there. But both Carol and I are working with this committee, Carol's, you know, our architect, to work on those design issues and immediate issues affecting people who are going to have mobility, people who have problems that need extra help navigating around this. But anything else, Chris?
I think you covered it pretty well, David. I would just say that, is, that you mentioned that part of the, well, overall, the effort is better flow. There's a lot of interest throughout our system of improving pedestrian flow. In addition to this work that's internal, there's a professor at George Washington University who Metro has kind of supported his efforts to study our stations and even supported his efforts at gaining grant funds to help develop better passenger pedestrian flow, excuse me. And we've also, whenever our department, of course, is involved, we also asked the professor to consider customers with disabilities front and center in his work. So this is another effort at that. They're looking at reversing the elevators. The escalators, did you mention that part?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that. So, yeah, so we're trying to improve pedestrian flow through our stations for safety as well as just efficiency purposes. And I think, again, you covered most of the talk about the beacons. So I think David's covered most of that.
Oh, a couple more things I forgot. Sorry. Signage, we're going to be changing the signage on the mezzanine level and lower level to make sure people get in the right escalator, on the right escalator. And we're also probably going to change the assignment of in and out on the fare gates, the Chinatown exit, so that we start people off with different traffic flow as they come into that station from that exit.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Sure. David, are you ready for questions?
I think so.
Are you ready to fill this question? That's the
sorry, but it's kind of a complex
thing. It is, no, it's quite all right.
I'm going to be honest, this is an early stage, so we may be able to ask you questions, or this might be one of those. We'll have to take it back and get back to you type of session. But yeah, let's.
This is more suggestion than question. On the 6-car train stops here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not clear whether that's the back of the train,
yes,
or the middle or the front.
Absolutely.
And I sent that in when I filled out the Amplify form, and I'm just filling it directly to you, that it is actually the end of the train, not
exactly
anywhere near the door.
Yeah, we're talking about that, too. We're talking about that issue.
The other thing, financially, all of the technology and the beacons that you're talking about for crowding sound really good, but it's probably less expensive and more efficient to have personnel down there for, not every day,
okay.
Capital games, Wizard games, Taylor Swift concerts, because that's when the crowds are really bad. And having a human down there with a whiteboard would cost a lot less than all the money it's going to cost to do all the technology and things that you work out.
And we're with you on that for years, so I'm glad you made that point, not all the time.
Right.
But as you know, during the weekends and the safe tracks, I mean, we're having what we call our the most important people, you know, information people out every week. We train them before they go out so that they understand how to communicate and serve our customers with disabilities as well as just general information. So the agency is making that investment of having people out there, but those are very special, unique situations. Sounds like you're saying maybe expand it to the games and other things on a more permanent basis. I think that's a great idea. I think that's, again, one of the AAC recommendation type of approach, not necessarily just let's just say it and see what happens. I think if you guys bring that up, I think it'd be a great idea.
Yes, Patrick, to bring it up to RAC, because I think the RAC people would like to have that too.
Okay.
The who knew Dr. Bosner was a Taylor Swift fan.
On Swift.
You know, it's not Jonathan Swift, right?
Questions, Mr.
Yeah, exactly. Doris. Okay. Other questions?
I have some real concerns about this. And since you said it's early in the process, I really do hope that you will consult and have your consultant at, what is it, George Washington University, consult with people with disabilities, particularly people with vision impairments, to maybe even walk through stations, because some of the things that you're proposing, as you even noted yourselves, could cause some real confusion for people with vision impairments. Because once you've been travel trained and you got the flow, the current flow down for gallery plays, it is in many ways a complex situation, and I just the idea of reversing the escalator flow concerns me. The guardrails, I guess I don't get what the guardrails are going to do. One of the things that's most important for me to know the directions, for example, for of an escalator is not just using tactile cues, which I do, but also those lighted arrows. Those lighted arrows on those escalators, which have been there from the beginning, are in my view, where as a vision impaired person with a significant vision impairment, are really, really helpful. And being able to see them and anything that would obscure them is problematic. I know that there's issues for path of travel for people with mobility impairments too, and knowing what is the shortest route of travel to get to a train. And the audio beacons might be a good idea, but they really need to explicitly tell people what's going on. And for deaf-blind people in particular, the decibel level, so that one can hear it over the various periods, particularly when it's noisy, when our station is crowded, is another issue. And I also think that the clogging up of people at like on the Red Line track, happens in part because you know, the natural human factor instinct of coming to the top of the elevator, getting to the platform, and just standing there. So that's my concern, but my concern is that I work closely with this committee and we
agree on that. So let me just say this, Doris, thanks, Chairman. Just so I'm clear, this particular work is in-house. This is Metro staff. We're going to bring them here, and I think your recommendation that, and I can tell you, these particular colleagues, I know Michael and his team, they are always cognizant of customers with disabilities, but folks can always understand and hear more. And I think we're going to bring them here. We're going to share some of your initial feedback so that they're prepared for that and have some more details for you. But this is the in-house work that we're talking about, and you should have an opportunity to speak directly to them.
But I think also that you should look at baseline. What is the travel pattern for people now, and what this might mean? And also, you know, the technology and stuff, and Phil mentioning having people there. You know, another big improvement at Gallery Place would be the lights, because there are many dark spots in that particular station, and we need to be talking about
that. Thank you, Doris.
Mr. Chairman, sure, one thing to Doris I would tell you.
Yes, please, go ahead.
You know, I also have a very significant vision impairment and hearing impairment, and I'm involved in each of these meetings. I'm raising these issues directly with them every single time because I know how it's going to affect me, and I think I can anticipate in a great deal how it's going to affect you and others like us. And I'm also, you know, sending this stuff to O&M people, having them look at it, and, you know, we're doing our homework on that end. I just wanted to assure you of that.
Great. Mr. Chairman, Barbara Millville would like to speak.
Before we do that, are there others on the committee? No, it's quite all right. Thank you. Are there others on the committee that have questions? Charlotte, go ahead.
Just want to say that I'm talking to my wife this morning.
Here's the mic, please.
Sure.
Was this it?
Thank you.
Okay. I was talking with my wife this morning. It happens every day. And, but she said to me, you know, someday I just wish they just tell us it was a 6 or 8 car train coming in. Because for her to make, to get into position, to get to the train door with all the people around, it's pretty difficult.
Yes.
And, you know, her job is good, but not that good. So I really appreciate that about the 6 and 8 car trains, and hope it happens sooner than later.
Thank you, John. Others? On the committee, and then we'll come to you, Mark, I promise. Yeah, just real quick, I do want to add to what both Charlie and Dora said with respect to, you know, when the time is right to come to the community and get some focused input, particularly with respect to what are those commands that are most pertinent, most needed by travelers in the system. You know, if you can build in medians that have different messages, it'd be good to know, you know, because it's already a crowded landscape, both physically and auditorily, you know, we want to make sure that the important stuff gets through. And I also agree with Charlie's wife that having the announcement that, you know, 6 car train coming in is very helpful that they have that BART, and I think they have that a lot of other systems around the country. It's, it lets you know what's coming and where you got to be to get on it. And those are good things to know. Barbara, please.
Hey there. I wanted to say that this is one of the common complaints that I receive on behalf of the low vision group. People, well, it's part of what you're talking about, David. This occurs at pretty much any station. The people don't know where to stand when they're wanting to catch a train. And it's a lot of the tourists and just people who aren't in our system very often. But they come down the escalator and they see a bench there and they're like, oh, cool, a bench, let's sit down. And then, of course, it's like 10 minutes and they're gabbing away, whatever. And then the train comes in and it pulls, it's a 6 car train, for example, and it pulls all the way to the front, as those of us, the veterans who ride the system, know. And then they're realizing that the train is bypassing them and they have to do more than walk like 20 steps to catch it. And then they start running, and then it really becomes a safety issue because they're not familiar with the platform and they could have a slip and fall. And so this brings me to, I mean, I watch the people when my train is not coming in for a while, and you can see this pretty easily. This is what's going on, and my question is, why can't the trains pull up where they used to be before the incident at Fort Totten? It is my understanding from a Metro person that the reason why they come all the way up, whether it's a 4, 6, or 8 car train, is because, literally, they don't want the trains to run into each other. And so that would really solve it. You really wouldn't need a whole lot of signs because you're used to just waiting by the bench anyway and that sort of thing. And to the point of the audio, I mean, I've been in a couple of parades where they have the audio description and the crowds are yelling, people are passing by, there's different airplanes such. You just cannot hear, even in the best of intentions. And you cannot hear, so I would not assume that the audio would help those with vision loss or anyone else, teenagers, you know. that how they can get, and just crowds in general. So if I can have an answer to that question, that'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. Chris or David, either one of them take that.
Okay, yeah, that's going to have to be a follow-up because I was at MTA when that unfortunate incident happened. They were talking about the same incident. And I remember us doing a lot of follow-up with the Maryland General Assembly as to what we're doing here at MTA to make sure this won't happen. But in terms of where the cars stopped, I mean, I don't mind doing the follow-up, but I need to get a little more information on that. I know that that we were looking at automatic train control at one point, and that would still stop the cars basically kind of where they're stopping now. If there was a different location of where cars were stopping, I can tell you that would be problematic. If you don't stop the cars where they are now, it would be problematic on 8-car trains, which is what we're all trying to go to. So for 6-car trains, yeah, there's probably less some flexibility there, but for 8-car trains, which is where we're trying to go, you're really covering the whole platform. So I'm not sure if that's going to be the answer, but I can follow up in the meantime while we're still using these
cars. I'm sorry to interrupt. If I could add, it's been on the news quite frequently. If you remember a few years ago, actually not a few years ago, I think it was 2 years ago, very recently, there was a high number of student line shoppers on Metro, and so student line shoppers, the people who go shopping and on the train.
Suicide.
Yeah, people were trying to shop to death in front of the train. So, from my own news, they made a lot of announcements that we are going to be pulling the train all the way out. So, that was the change and they implemented, I think, very recently, within the last 3 years. So, that's why all trains go all the way up to the very end of the tunnel, before the tunnel entrance. So, and it's quite annoying sometimes. I mean, a lot of people find it annoying because the train moves and then they stop, and then everybody thinks that's where they're going up, and then they keep moving because the driver is trying to be sure that they get all the way up to where the tunnel is, because they can't allow somebody to accidentally run if try to purposely run through. That's why. I mean, it's not on the mirror, so.
I have to follow up on that. Thank you,
Brian. That's interesting. Okay, we're out of time for this topic, but I'm very glad that you brought to our attention. As a number of us have indicated, you know, please keep us informed and keep us involved, and look forward to seeing what happens next at Gallery Place. Frank, do you want to go with your report? Thank you for your ombudsman report as well, David. Thank you.
Sure.
Do we want to go back to the Pentagon City?
Yeah, so these last two are designed to be brief, but we'll see. Let's see how the conversation goes on. This year has been a long-standing matter, but it was recently, when I say recently, it was back in January, but for some reason it's never made it to the agenda. We talked about it briefly, but it never made it to the agenda here. So Pentagon City, at the Pentagon City Station, there was once the Verizon building. Now it's owned by somebody else, and so another name is going to go in that building. There was a tunnel there that connected to the Metro station, and they wanted to open the tunnel. Now, Metro's position, especially since I've been here, but even before I arrived, but I just made sure we keep that position, is that the work they were going to have to do to the tunnel, in my professional opinion, was determined to be substantial construction. And if you're doing substantial construction, we want it to be fully accessible. I'm rather conservative on that, and I'm talking politically, but just talking in terms of reading the design, what's happening. So we require elevators at both ends. Arlington County has strongly disagreed with my opinion. That's fair. I mean, okay. And so it's been a back and forth for actually a number of years. I mean, we've been kind of going back and forth with this. Finally, an agreement has been reached between Metro and Arlington, and that is, while this is Metro's property, it's being
transferred in terms of the responsibility, the maintenance, to, and it's open now, I think, this is where I'm going. So it's been transferred to the county, people can use the tunnel, it doesn't have elevators. They disagree that any work that they've done was basic maintenance work and not substantial construction work, so that it didn't, it was still under the pre-ADA guidelines. So it's open today. If there's ever any control, any concerns raised, the issue and the matter between the FDA or any other regulatory body would be between the county and not Metro, would be between the county and that regulatory body and not Metro. But Metro has the right for emergency as well as excess purposes to close the tunnel at our discretion. But it would have to be following any concerns that are raised or any rulings that come down by a regulatory body. The tunnel is open. It's been a, I haven't heard anything yet. It hasn't come to my attention. But my understanding is the tunnel is open. People are using it. And it's under the control of the county.
Chris, can I ask where the tunnel is? Because when I got off the red line in Pentagon City, I either go off into the mall,
right,
or I go off to the other side.
Did you say right by the
this tunnel, and I can only talk about from the street level. If you know where there's a pharmacy store, I want to say it's CVS.
Is it the 12th and Hayes or 13th and Hayes?
Okay, no, 13th, but let me just find the store.
There's one place where all of the shuttle buses leave.
That's on the mall side.
Right.
Unless you're coming from that building or that side where there's residence and office buildings, you're probably not going to use it.
It's the Crystal City side. Right. I mean, it's not the mall side.
It's the opposite side of the mall.
Right.
So if you're not coming or going there, you're probably not going to encounter this. But it was something that was in the paper. We're supposed to bring it up a while back. But I just wanted to give the update as to the background and the history that our office did look at it. We were kind of the obstructionists, if you want to use that term, to Metro opening it, but the county has it and they are working or dealing with any regulatory body for any complaints or concerns that are raised about the availability of that tunnel under its current conditions.
That's not the street, there is an elevator that takes you right up to the street and lets you out right in front of that little strip mall that leads you around towards Costco.
Right. I think we're still talking on the other side. I haven't been out there in a few months, I'll
admit. Yeah, I'll buy that too. Okay, so Doris, then Charlie, then Patrick. Welcome back, by the way. Thank you.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I think that this was brought up in part because of testimony that I gave when this item came up in February for the board meeting. And so essentially, my concerns about this are this. I really appreciate WMATA and Mr. Blake for paying attention to the issue about whether this was a substantial renovation, and I understood there was a lot of, you know, things they had to take care of in terms of leaks and all kinds of stuff, so it seems substantial to me, but the testimony that I brought up was this. The issue, in addition to potentially being an ADA issue, is an issue of a law that preceded that, and the law under which Vic Hettinger brought the lawsuit that ensured access to all of our stations through the elevators. And that law is the Architectural Barriers Act of 1968. That lawsuit was brought under the ABA. And in that settlement,
that lawsuit, there was a provision that if his stations were opening new pedestrian tunnels, commercial and or whatever, that that they must be built accessible. The tunnel was built in 1984, well after the ABA and well after Section 504. And so what I had brought up at the board meeting was that we should investigate that issue prior to signing off the agreement for Lamont's purposes of the base with Arlington County. And this issue is mirrored in a number of places throughout the system, but in Virginia, particularly, Courthouse is a prime example of this, and actually this issue was raised in 1993 at Courthouse. It was raised once again in the mid-80s when they were reconstructing and repurposing the building that was the old Woody's and the tunnels that go through there that bring you all the way over to Grand Hyatt.
1 minute, sir.
So that is what I would like, because the Womack has already signed the agreement now, though, is I would like the committee and staff to help us review this issue as it relates to that lawsuit settlement agreement.
Thank you, Doris. Chris, do you want to respond to that before we go on to Charlie and Patrick? There's a lot there.
Yeah, there's a lot there, and I don't think we have any objections to helping the committee understand the issue better and relate it to these other points. And I would just add, just Phil, as you're going out there, it is 12 days, and the picture I'm looking at doesn't have a name on the tall building anymore, but it's on the street opposite of the Basie side. So you know what the
Basie,
it's on the other side, and it's a block, if you will, up from Basie, going towards the little strip on the CBS.
Charlie, I promise I forgot. Is that tunnel, when it's not under construction, otherwise accessible?
No. It wasn't built prior to certain requirements.
Maybe before, I guess. Right. I guess depending on which requirements we're talking about. But thank you. I appreciate that. That helps me understand Doris's comment even better. So, Charlie, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You're welcome.
My question is very short. So how much would it cost to put elevators in that tunnel?
It was estimated to be in more than mid to high seven figures.
Mid to high seven figures?
Right.
You mean like $9,999,000?
It could be that high. They'll say it's that much, but I don't know it's that much. But what is it, $20,000? We've had different estimates from the developer as to the substantial cost it would take to make this tunnel accessible to today's standards.
Yeah, there's a big difference between 200,000 and a million.
Who said 200,000?
Depends on the elevator. If they put in the jet elevators like they have at Ross Lynn, it would be several million. If they put in just a crank and a pulley, then you would be
$200,000. Well, I have to wonder, though, if the kind of elevator that is, for example, at Courthouse on the Wilson Boulevard side across from the escalators, I'm wondering about that because that looks, what I'm trying to say is that looks like a cheaper kind of setup, but I could be wrong about that. But the thing about a courthouse that is so maddening is that actually you have to come up the escalators to get to the tunnel, the pedestrian tunnel, that takes you to that you have to come up or down escalators to get to the pedestrian tunnel on the other side where Wilson is. And this situation, the other thing, Mr. Chair, the Arlington County has said they wanted to open this for the safety of pedestrians. The South Hayes Street right there is 6 to 8 lanes across.
And thank you, Doris. I do want to get back to Patrick. You're welcome. Thank you, Doris.
Appreciate it. A couple questions for Mr. Blake. So, Doris, I think you mentioned this. We had some folks who came in, I think it was the February board meeting, asked to speak to have a meeting with Jack Evans regarding this pedestrian bridge. My thinking is now that the property has been transferred to Arlington, that meeting would be with this particular group and folks in Arlington, correct? Omada doesn't have any jurisdiction over this pedestrian walkway.
Correct.
Okay. And the second question would be,
except
as far as, thank you. As far as this committee is concerned, Bus Rail Subcommittee and the full committee, that this bridge, as it were, is outside our jurisdiction as a committee for the scope of what we're supposed to do, since it's now owned by Arlington. Is that correct or not?
That would be correct, yes.
Okay.
But can I say something?
One second, Doris. Patrick, are you done? I'm sorry.
I'm done. Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead, Doris.
The suit, as I understand it, and the settlement agreement says that it is when these tunnels are built, you know, some of them are built by private developers, like in the case downtown here, that they can't be operated as an entrance way to subway unless they're accessible. And that's what we need to review, I think, because then Patrick, it would be, I think, in the purview here, because the lawsuit was against Lamont.
Right.
And it mentioned specifically the pedestrian health.
And that was that's been always the point. But what they're saying is, had this been built, remained open, it would still be there as it is. Maybe Metro would have done something, maybe not, but the tunnel was closed. There was some work done. We took one opinion. However, when you're saying when something is built, this isn't a new construction, and that's what always the philosophical discussion has been. This is not new construction, so it's not required per many people's opinions, not necessarily AM's, but many people's opinions, that the tunnel as it is right now is still compliant because it was built prior to the ADA.
This is Brian. When it was built, as Doris mentioned, after the architectural barriers, and it wasn't that, I think that was the law that was used to initiate the original suit. Something maybe worth exploring to see if there's leverage there or how we might address some of these issues.
Yeah. Okay.
Just throwing that out there. Other questions? Maybe folks have an ask question to him.
Okay, Barbara.
For sure. Yeah. Barbara, go ahead.
Again, I would like to say that legal issues aside, and I'm not saying for or against it, because I don't really have information, but Metro should be concerned about this from the standpoint of emergency evacuation of persons with disabilities. Now, if, say, someone is using a chair and they head towards the tunnel and they're not aware that there are no routes for them to get through that tunnel and such, then they kind of wasted time during that whole process, and then they have to come back and find another way out. So at the very least, I would recommend that Ramada put up signs and something on the website saying not wheelchair accessible. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara.
Chris,
okay, so there is not a sign for now that says you know, the other end of this thing is not accessible.
No, sir.
Yeah. That's a very good point, Barbara. Thank you. Okay, barring any other quick questions, I think there's some issues here that they're bear readdressing in the near future. So I appreciate Mr. Blake you bringing this to our attention and keeping this on our radar in terms of these models. Okay, our final topic, Ronald Reagan Washington National Airport accessibility.
Well, yeah,
no, particularly keen about this one.
Access, yes, you raised this one. Access. This is definitely a case where it's totally out of Metro's control.
Oh, way to set it up.
Yeah. But we did try out. So there's construction going on now at the Reagan National Airport, where one of the, in fact, I would say the shortest distance to the terminal is now being closed. We suggested, and what this means is that all customers, not just customers with disabilities, but all customers have a much longer path of travel to get from the station to the terminals or vice versa. We suggested and even tried to get into their construction minds and show that they could create a temporary accessible path for all customers, including those with disabilities, to keep the distance relatively short. That wasn't accepted. They said that would actually delay their project, having to do this temporary access and the work that would go into that. So there's going to be a point in a matter of time in terms of traveling to the Reagan National Airport on the Metro Rail and having a longer than perhaps expected path of travel between the Metro Rail station and the actual airport itself. You can get there, but it is a challenge. And I will even say, given the distance, if you're using a mobility device or crutches or anything, it's an effort. An automatic mobile device. But other than that, it's a challenge. But it's there. We just wanted to follow up with Brian, just so you know that as you and the committee raised this issue, we did try to influence it a little bit, though it's completely outside of our jurisdiction.
Is it longer than the move from where the Dulles shuttle drops you off at Wheely Rested to the platform at Wheely Rested, which is about a mile and a half?
Okay, not that long.
So it is shorter than getting to the Wheely Rested platform.
That's a good point.
Just for a point of clarification, is it the access to both of the terminals that are approximately, you know, the closest ones to the Metro stop, or just one and not the other, or is it both terminals? I think it was at A and B, I think, or?
Yeah, I think the terminals are A and B, but I thought you go through the same entrance for A and B, and there's another one for C, and then you have to walk all the way back to A and B.
Yeah. So it is both A and B then?
I believe so.
And this is in conjunction with the construction that's designed to build all the security entrance, right?
That's correct. It's
outside of the check-in area.
Correct.
And that's a project that is years in length, right?
The overall project, yes, but in terms of this particular diversion of walking, that's probably not going to be years in the making, but many, many months.
Thank you. Doris, sorry.
Okay, this is a couple of questions. One, Mr. Blake, is this diversion in process right now? I mean, has it already started?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so I want to inform you that there is going to be a large group of people who are wheelchair users that are going to be coming through next weekend and the weekend after, during the week after. So that's definitely something to talk about. Secondly, What I'm wondering is, now, I know the disability community in Northern Virginia, as well as this community, were involved originally in the building of, in the redesign of the platform at National Airport, and the accessible entrance, although with the new terminal, I can't speak, other terminal, I can't speak to that, but the original redesign of the airport and the accessible entrance into the airport, which was way, way shorter than what you used to have to do, because you used to have to go down and into the street and around to an elevator, blah, blah, blah. So what I'm wondering is the entrance where the diversion is now, that closest entrance, maybe that's Terminal B, I don't travel that much by air, you'll have to forgive me, but that terminal entrance where you walk up the platform and you get off, I think, to the left, and then it's like a pedestrian bridge, but it also has moving sidewalks. And it takes you right into the terminal. Is that the one that's being diverted now?
That's what we're talking about, yes.
Yes. Okay. That is just... is this under the purview of the airport's authority?
You mean who's actually doing the work?
Yeah.
I'll have to find that out.
Probably you.
That's probably... That's a long time there, but I'm pretty sure. But I'll get back to the committee and write on that.
I think those are important issues, and to where the TSA is involved in Homeland Security and whatever, because these became issues also at the redesign of the Pentagon City stop and the new entrance into Pentagon stop, where the buses are. And the new entrances to Pentagon itself, and we've been through this before, and to have to go through this now without advance working with this committee and WMATA, and I recognize all the security stuff and everything, I think personally is outrageous.
There are two exits from the platform. One lets you down by US Air, which is Terminal A, and the other one lets you down by Delta, which is B. And so are they shutting off both ends or just one end?
That's what I was trying to figure out, too.
I'm happy to get to the side next. I thought the one pedestrian tunnel takes you to A and B, and the other takes you to C. But let me get that.
No, C is off separate. Because I flew in on Friday and came in at the JetBlue Delta, and that was open.
Okay, let me follow up in writing with you on that as well, and I'll give you information as to exactly who the constructing party. I'm sure it's kind of long, but let me just, before I say that on the record, I'll send it to you in an email.
And I'd like another path of travel that somebody is going to have to take.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree, Doris. That would be helpful to have some guidance from a lot of, because that's certainly the way I prefer to get to the airport, if at all possible, by Metro.
At least the JetBlue Delta open as it was on Friday, basically. It's not nearly as long as a trip with really rested. It's just going to the airport. And if you're going to the middle ramps, it's not that at all. It's just if you're going to US Air, it's going to be a distance. But it's probably, I would guess, about a quarter mile.
Wow. Thank you. Other questions or comments for Mr. Blake? I appreciate your responsiveness to that the questions that were raised. Was last month when we first heard about the construction that's going to be happening at Reagan National. So this is I appreciate the responsiveness. It's a little discouraging to as Doris indicated, to hear that we are going to be significantly impacted, and it may have, at least due to a lot of mechanisms, limited opportunities. here to have some voice in that effort. So, but I do thank you for bringing some more details. Thank you. Okay, I think we're on to new business, and I know Brianne has a motion that she wants to bring. I don't know what it is, but she has one.
Thank you, Brian. So I wanted to make a motion regarding the whiteboard. Since the whiteboard is still, okay, so the issue is still educating the staff, training the staff of Milano to be more aware that they have the whiteboard at the school. I like to market it towards the customer base of people using the monitors, buses, and rail. And so I believe I would like to make a motion. I know it may be beyond the power of the committee or council, but I'd like to make a motion that Milano somehow find a way to market that they have the tools available to customers, and in turn that we're trying to increase their users of, you know, if people out there know that there's whiteboard, more kinds of things, and Milano making the effort to be more accessible to their customers, that they will increase ridership. Okay? So it's a twofold when I'm saying my motion.
Can I say the motion? I mean, I know I'm not on the committee, but can I say a motion that we can probably act on and as a start? Number one, this committee would like Metro in its informational brochures to market the fact that the whiteboards are available as a means of communication.
What's the brochure?
That's our Metro Access Customer Guide for people with disabilities. It's our brochures. It's our we have using Metro brochure. We have a lot of little things.
So we do have a motion. Do we have a second so we can discuss?
Second.
Thank you, Phil. Discussion on the motion.
I'm sorry, I don't want to use your printed material on the website because that's unlimited base, but the limited customer base. I want the entire community to know. But not just the Metro Access writer or people with disabilities only, but everybody becomes. For example, I'm thinking of different monitoring community, very often doesn't identify itself as disabled. They may not read long material. They may avoid reading long material. That's why I'm thinking a little bit larger scale.
Okay. That's fair.
Actually, a very large sign at the station booth or at the entrances saying whiteboards are available for communication.
Where?
And also, no.
That shouldn't be.
It's also one of the messages that can be put on the 7,000 cars that are constantly streaming that say, make sure priority seating is available. You can also say whiteboards are available for communication.
So it's a broad-based public awareness and public information campaign that you would.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, picture, video, not just, you know, writing it on the website, but from something in this world, you know, a picture of people you're using a whiteboard to communicate. So, if there's some way to
those great signs that say, see something, say something, see something, write something.
Yeah.
I think that's a very good public relations group, but I can think of that. They can think of that also.
Is that a registered trademark of that?
Pardon me.
Doris.
I'm confused, and maybe it's clarified. I just want to verify the intent of the motion. The intent of the motion is that there be tools provided in the rail stations and on the buses that indicate the availability of whiteboards for communication, and that there be a broad public relations campaign to inform the entire public about the availability of the whiteboards. Is that, because I thought that in your comments you said something about making the whiteboards personally available to individuals with hearing impairments, you know, that WMATA would give them out or something, and that's an entirely different notion. So I just want to clarify which it is.
No, I have the word part. Having the WMATA tell the general public that they have the tools available, they are trying to make sure that the more accessible. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, so from that standpoint, I would call the question.
Any further discussion? Just want to make sure there's no other.
The only other thing I'd add, Brian.
Yes, Patrick.
One area that might be also useful, if it's still active, Mr. Blake, is Amplified. Let them get the word out.
Okay.
That type of service. And I don't know, what are they up to now? 5,000, 6,000 or something?
I don't have the number, but we can find that.
I would also suggest that we use some important communications vehicles like the Centers for Independent Living and like Gallaudet and the Virginia Department for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing and whatever the counterparts are in the other jurisdictions, so that there, that be targeted, but there also be a general campaign.
Right, I mean, Grant's point is it's make sure that the effort is broad-based enough because of the unique status of those individuals who are deaf or hard of hearing, not always identifying as individuals with disabilities, and it's not always plugged into some of those usual mechanisms of information that many of us who are more active in the disability community would regularly tap into.
And can I ask how a deafblind person is going to be able to avail themselves of this, if at all?
Why don't we let Randy answer that email?
Well, related to deafblind people and being able to read, it really depends on the individual. Some individuals have enough vision that they might be able to see the whiteboard and be able to make out what is written on it, whereas other individuals would not be able to do that. So it really depends on their vision level.
Well, I ask that because I've been in both.
I also would say 70% of deafblind people would be able to see something directly in front of them, so long as that was clear. Like if it was a black marker that was written very thick. If it was a thin marker, that might not work so much, but if it was bolder, thicker black marker, then that might work. The other point that I wanted to make is that if a deafblind person can locate the board and orient themselves to it, because that's an issue in and of itself. They actually can't even see the board at all. So it needs to be in a clear location where it can be recognizable very easily, so it gets their attention. So I guess those would be the basic premises that are important to be aware of.
Thank you, Randy.
What's the best way to disseminate the information that these whiteboards are available to the deafblind community? Should mental contact a certain organization, or should they advertise broadly across all mediums to be sure that deafblind consumers know about this as well?
Doris, we're waiting for Randy to respond.
I
Well, with the deafblind community, it is a very small one. And often information is received, again, it really depends on the individual. But the deafblind community is very diverse. And I can't underscore that enough. Some deafblind people actually are audiologically hard of hearing and might be completely blind, whereas another person may be hard of hearing and just have low vision. And then there might be another part, because you have to also consider deaf culture, where they might be able to see pretty well and see some, and might be able to see the board, whereas other deafblind individuals wouldn't be able to see it at all. So, as far as the information in general, I would think that a whiteboard is something that could be accessible to deafblind people and something that could be used. But for those that can't see at all, obviously then that would not work. And so maybe they would prefer some other means of communication, like maybe texting or something like that. And the interpreters right now are just clarifying the original, Brianne's original question about what means would be the best way to disseminate the information to the deafblind community. And so they're doing that now. Because that question may not have been clear to Randy originally. This is Randy. So here in the Washington, D.C. metro area, we do have an organization for deafblind people. It's the Metro Washington Association of Deafblind. And they have a lot of news and information that they share with the community, letting the community know about different things via different ways. Also, I think another thing, it's not a deafblind organization, but there is a deafblind division that exists of the National Federation for the Blind. Yeah. And so they are like a subcommittee, and you can reach out to them. And there are some deafblind people that prefer to get their information from the National Association of the Deaf, the NAD, and get information that way. So information goes out in various different ways. Okay. And now, with technology, deafblind people are able to access information on devices such as iPads or iPhones, and even have Braille readers as a part of that. But be careful overgeneralizing that, because not all individuals are tech savvy. And so they may not actually be accessible to that. Some deafblind people prefer to have an individual support provider that escorts them around and provides information and interprets for them so they know and are oriented to where they're at. For me personally, I use the Metro on my own. But sometimes I do miss things and misinformation because I do struggle to see some of the information as I'm trying to navigate the system, and I'm trying to follow the lights, and sometimes it's just impossible to see because there is a wall or something that's causing me to not be able to see, or there's a white line on the ground that obscures my vision or throws me off. And so that's why I really enjoy having the cane, because that helps me to be able to navigate around the system.
Thank you.
Now, as far as getting the information out, it's just hard. Basically.
Randy, we're almost out of time. Thank you very much. And we're almost out of time, so that's why I want to make sure we move on to actually voting for the motion. I think there are clearly a lot of permutations and things to be worked out in terms of what is effective to reaching the deafblind community versus the deaf and hard of hearing community. But in any case, so just to restate, we have a motion. Seconded.
I am a deafblind person as well.
I'm sorry.
I am a deafblind.
I understand. I'm sorry. Yeah, I understand. I understand.
So if I could just quickly say that I think that we need to use all means, which I think is the intent of the motion, but
as Randy has pointed out, we need to use communications that are targeted to the deaf and deafblind community where people are coming from and associated, or to the deaf community, but the same thing with blind folks coming who have come to be latent and hard of hearing or deaf, and going through blind organizations, both NFB, ACB, and possibly even NCCLB. Because the rehab department of organizations that I mentioned earlier.
Thank you, Doris. And there's a lot of details that I think can be worked out in the implementation of the motion. And so I'm going to call for the vote. We have a motion for WMATA to engage in a public information and awareness effort to make sure that individuals in the community are aware of the whiteboard as a tool for communication in Metro. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries.
Brian, yeah, Patrick, does the motion go from this subcommittee to the full committee?
It's a good point. Yes, it does.
Well, it should be a problem. We should expedite it.
Yes, right.
Okay. So I can bring it before the board?
Sure.
Good.
And I think it's a good one. Thank you, Brianne. So, and thank you, everybody. So I just have one more item.
Also point out that the other motions that were approved before the change were to the board also.
I hope so.
We've had a busy meeting, Patrick.
Good.
So I just wanted to, one final note. This will be my last meeting as chair of the subcommittee. I notified, I think most of you know, that I'm going to be resigning from the committee as of July 1st, and I'm going to be traveling in June, and I know that shocks you, but I'd be traveling. I may be here for the AAC meeting, but I won't be here in June, so my very capable first and second vice chairs will be able to handle that meeting in June. But in any case, and then you all have to find somebody else to take over this gavel, but I wanted to say that it's been a pleasure and an honor to be working with you all for the last 5, 6, 7 years, however really long it's been. 20, how long has it been? You all have been very supportive and a pleasure to work with, and that's true of most of the committee members as well as a lot of staff, so I just wanted to take a moment to thank you all for your support over this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, ask one quick question, and it will be done.
Very quick. We're out of time. We're going to lose our interpreters.
Well, what I wanted to ask is, with regard to the station painting project at Union Station, and any consideration of going forward with other stations.
No.
Is that in progress, or is that halted?
Real quick, they finished painting Union Station, but there are no plans in the immediate future to paint any other stations.
And would it have to come up in an item in the budget?
I'm not sure about that, but we'll make sure people know about it before it's done.
All right, thank you, Doris. Okay, we're out of time, and I just want to thank you all again for it's a busy agenda, and all hung in there, but I really appreciate that. Can I get a motion to adjourn? Thank you, Charlie. 10 seconds. All those in favor of adjourn, signify by saying aye.